Well, it's election day, and this is the busiest day inside any political war room, and that's why our political war room is in business.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
Zane Velji, political campaign strategist, partner at Northweather. He worked with Calgary Mayor Nadine Nenshi, who's had some tough words about Jason Kenney and the situation in Alberta. Tasha Carradine, a principal with Navigator Limited and national political columnist for Post Media. And Tom Mulcair, who's a young upstart. I think he was the leader of the NDP. Oh, yes, he was. And the CTV political analyst. Good election day to you. I've divided this into the gamblers and the wild cards. The liberal gamble, calling an election a reward or punishment. The conservative gamble, the big rebrand. The liberal, the NDP gamble, can he actually win seats with his kind of courtship of the youth and the TikTok? And then the wild card, the PPC, the Bloc, and the Greens. I'm going to just start with you, Zane. Talk about the Liberal gamble here and what you expect to see, and if Justin Trudeau gets rewarded or punished, and did he manage to frame this bloody election after 36 days?
If Justin Trudeau loses tonight, it will perhaps be the biggest own goal in Canadian political history. If Justin Trudeau gets anything but a majority tonight, he's going to be significantly weakened. I mean, either way, this is not looking great for Trudeau outside of that one possibility of a majority. And then all's forgiven. You were right, boss. You knew the electorate. You had a pulse on it. You knew that, you know, they'd be angry about the question, but you'd answered it correctly. All's forgiven. But if it's any other scenario, Evan, I mean, he's significantly weakened, maybe not in how he governs, but he doesn't get to end his tenure as prime minister perhaps the way he wanted, with a solid sort of majority. He has to perhaps leave, you know, a couple years in or a year into it. It's a very different story for Justin Trudeau. And let's not forget, I've mentioned this before on the show, his campaign tactics during the 36-day pressure cooker were very much based on division, pounding on fractures that existed against anti-vaxxers, et cetera. He's going to have to deal with that if he does indeed continue to govern on the back end of this. So not just a weakened prime minister, but perhaps an even more divided electorate that he then has to preside over, Evan.
Yeah, I'd push back a bit on that, to be candid, only because, you know, I'm with you. His brand is burnt even if he wins this thing. But you know, Tasha, a lot will depend on the political landscape, because in politics, everything's relative. And that brings us to the O'Toole brand, because he gambled that he can transform his party from a Harper party back to a Mulroney party, a progressive party. He jumped a lot of his members with the price on carbon, and he said it's going to be worth it because otherwise we can't win. If he doesn't win today, and the polls don't say he will, but if he maybe he squeaks it out, then the question is, can he survive? Has his gamble paid off or not? Or has he alienated a lot of Harper conservatives who said, stop saying that you're not your dad's party. Stop throwing us under the bus. We governed for almost a decade.
Yeah. Does he know when to hold them, fold them, walk away or run, right? It's the big question. And I think right now there are rumors and conversations that are happening within the party as to, you know, if he doesn't win, do we go through this whole exercise again? Do we play turf the leader again? I mean, the conservatives have a bit of a revolving door lately when it comes to their leaders, and every approach has been different. Andrew Scheer did that, you know, I'm Harper with a smile, and O'Toole is now, I'm not Harper and I'm not your dad. I'm, I guess, Mulroney reincarnated in a way. And I don't know if people have bought that. I think the reason that the Conservatives were broadsided a bit was because of the PPC and the fact that there was this other hardcore element which could have played in their favor, in the sense of, you know, look, we're not those people, and look what a disaster some of the attitudes that they hold, like Alberta, has come to show. But there's the numbers game. And if the PPC siphons enough numbers to deny the Conservatives either victory or even a larger opposition than they have now, then the argument's going to be, well, obviously we need to go back to our base. And so I don't know if O'Toole, I don't see anyone resigning tonight, to be honest with you,
because
I don't think we'll fully know the results. But I do think in the next year there's going to be a shift, and if this doesn't work out for him, then there will be obviously questions asked, and he might be gone. But then again, maybe he won't. People are kind of tired.
Go ahead, Zane.
I was just going to add on the O'Toole strategy, you know, it might just be a function of timing. right? Mm-hmm. He may have had the right strategy to move the party to the center, but you don't do that in like 36 days, man. You telegraph that for months. You bring people along, evolution, not revolution. And because it was jarring to us as observers and watchers and pundits, it was clearly jarring to the base as well that this is what we're doing. So he may have had the right strategy. He just may have overlaid it with the wrong timeline.
Well, there's a couple things I think branding yourself as Brian Mulroney. One, Brian Mulroney was essentially banished under the Harper years, and he didn't have Harper. So that's tricky. He's already sprung the price on carbon. A lot of MPs who spent years running against it. Okay. I think, you know, the Brian Mulroney strategy, for those who remember, was the grand coalition, but it required you win in Quebec. There's mm-hmm. no signs that O'Toole is going to run through Quebec. He's got the 10 seats there, and if he holds out, he's lucky. So there's no coalition that really includes Quebec. And then finally, remember, Brian Mulroney famously said to John Turner in, I think, the 84 debate, you had an option, sir, about a patronage appointments of senators. Well, Maxime Bernier is saying to conservative voters, you have an option. And if you're mad, Tash, you have an option as a conservative. Yeah. And they do.
And that's the thing, is there's another place for people to go. And most of the votes that are going PPC that are bleeding from other parties are bleeding from the conservatives. So you've got the disenfranchised, the angry, the people who don't usually vote or using this as a protest vehicle. But you do have some conservatives who say, I feel like O'Toole is a different guy than the guy who ran. And, you know, but there are some differences between how obviously he ran his leadership campaign and how he's running now. So right. They do have a legitimate point there.
Let's bring in Tom Mulcair, because he's with us now, not only in spirit, but in radio. To quote Rush, the spirit of radio. Tom, the big gambles tonight, how do they play out?
Well, I think that what you were just referencing with regard to O'Toole's big gamble, which was the recentering of his party, that's going to play out. Trudeau's Ben Campbell, obviously, is pulling the plug on an election in the middle of the fourth wave of a pandemic. And, you know, people talked about that for a whole lot, but we don't know how much it's actually going to move votes, or will it just discourage people and leave them at home? I mean, I spent a good part of my weekend prepping and, you know, with a great pollster named Léger. And, you know, he's got numbers similar to the other national polls. It's a really tight race. We can't talk about anything beyond what was already public yesterday, but what we can say is this: in that very tight race, outside influences will come into play. Yeah. I mean, what is the motivation? Who are the most motivated voters? And they're the ones who are actually going to come out and vote. That could have a determining effect. We learned against Scheer that the Liberals have a pretty efficient vote. It's well spread out. You know, the Conservatives tended to be bunched together and only gives you X number of seats in the prairies. So it's going to be fun to watch. And one last thing, I'm sure that everybody's aware of it, but, you know, with them only starting to open the vote, the mail-in vote Tuesday noon, tonight, yeah, when we hit the sack, we're going to look at some numbers. We're going to say, oh, this one is ahead. But if somebody's ahead by 178 votes and you know that there are 2,000 mail-in votes still to mm-hmm. be counted, you can't put that into the win column for anybody.
No, but Tom, real quick, Quebec, did the Bloc hold? Will the Liberals, in your view, can they break through there? Can the Conservatives break through? Or is this essentially status quo there? The Bloc holds, everyone kind of holds, and Quebec doesn't really move the needle.
There are a couple of fights that will be Bloc between the Bloc and the Conservatives. The Liberals around, maybe nipping around in Quebec City a bit. The Bloc seems to have done, from available information, the Bloc seems to have done spectacularly well in getting out the vote on the advance polls, because the advance polls occurred right after the English debate with that question that was really controversial here in Quebec. So we'll see if that plays out, because it was a tight race all around. And the Liberals had sworn at the beginning of the campaign that they were going to steal a bunch of Bloc seats. And the Bloc said that they wanted to go from 32 seats, they wanted to go up to 40. So we're going to see which one of those two predictions is cool. But we have to remember, the Conservatives have to win all the seats that they've got. The Liberals have to hold on to what they've got. And if there's any bleeding in any of the five regions, Atlantic, Quebec, Ontario, Prairies, or BC, it's going to have a determining effect on the result.
Okay, War Room. Now, when we come back, we're going to get Zane. This is really going to be interesting. Zane is going to explain Jagmeet Singh in the shower. I have no idea what this is about. Jagmeet Singh sitting in a shower as an actual political... We'll have to explain it. He's doing... Jagmeet Singh took a shower fully clothed, and somehow this is supposed to motivate voters. I have no idea. Zane, who's the... He claims to be the hippest. I have no idea what's happening. We'll do that, plus the wild cards coming up. Welcome back to the program, everybody. Election day. We'll get your calls about what you expect, what you want to see, and your questions. But we are inside the war room with the wool room. The war room
the
with
war
Tom
room?
Mulcahy.
We're in Woolworths.
We're in Woolworths.
The dining counter.
Good.
We are in the middle of Hogwarts with Zane Velji, Tasha Carradine, and it does seem like
if
Hogwarts,
only.
I can hardly wait to listen to you at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, Evan, this is get the jitters out right now, Sullivan.
Who's in Slytherin?
Let me tell you something. The value of drinking throughout this is really incredible. 3 in the morning is nothing. It's the next day when it'll be like, oh, that was a great election. Let me start with you, Tash, on this one. Wild cards, because let's be candid. The PPC's here. It's a real issue. You know, even Nick Nanos got him at 6.6%. You got other pollsters having them close to 10. They're going to affect the splits. I guess two questions. What's the impact of the PPC? But more importantly, not just on this election, but long term, is this the arrival of a kind of populist movement that suddenly the conservatives got to really worry about? This is the beginning of a real movement, like the Reform Party was once for, guess what, the Brian Mulroney conservatives.
I think there's some differences between this and the Reform Party. Reform Party grew out of a rather longstanding tradition of grievance against Ottawa by the West. Preston Manning was not new to politics by any stretch. He came from a very political background. His father, of course, was Premier of Alberta. And I think that there was a sense there of carrying this forward to make real lasting change. I think here is more just people who are mad at a whole bunch of things, including some factors that might not stick around. I mean, I hope not anyway, long term, which is the pandemic and vaccinations. I mean, how many elections are we going to be talking about this for? You know, I'd love this to be the last one. So that is a different phenomenon. Now, that said, it depends if they elect people to the House as well. If they do manage to elect people, and right now I know our polling at Navigator shows that there is a likelihood of at least one seat in Alberta going PPC. So they will have some representation. That gets some airtime. That gets some space in the public
What seat is that? I didn't think that's – I mean, that's interesting because the boast is Max's seat. And by the way, speaking of political families, as Tom will know and you all know, Maxime Bernier's father was also a PC MP. Then he ran as an independent. So it's not like Max doesn't also have a political lineage, maybe not of the same size as Manning. But what's the riding you're talking about?
I should have looked at – because our researcher made a report to our meeting this morning on this. That's what they – and they don't think Max is going to win. That is not the – you know, in the office. But there could be, in theory, up to several seats, depending on the splits that happen across the country, that could be in play because of the PPC vote. So if that happens, then you've got more legitimacy. What happens in the next leaders' debate? We have to get more than 4% of the vote. They're in, folks. So, again, they're not going to go away. But I hope their issues go away, in which case they will not stick around as long, because for the Conservatives, it's a very bad thing to have them splitting the vote.
Well, I wonder, are the sutures that Harper put together on his modern-day conservative party, where social conservatives and rock-ribbed conservatives from out west with Ontario conservatives, are those getting cut by Erin O'Toole and people are just saying, fool me once, not fool me twice? Zane, as he moves to the center, does Maxime Bernier not only capitalize on the anti-vax movement, but actually start getting deeper purple roots there?
That's what their hope is, right? That there's natural seams within the construction of this modern day conservative party. And those seams can be the natural points for ripping off the party and then adding this wave that, yes, comes largely from the conservative movement, but has wildly interesting demographics, geographics regarding anger, regarding that overlay of anger. And I think that anger, to Tasha's point, perhaps in this moment is about the pandemic, but a party like this, I am sure, and I say this begrudgingly because I don't want them to, we'll find something else to volley. We'll find something else to be anti-establishment about. So, you know, if they get electoral success, expect them to keep around and perhaps maybe not grow as big as Reform, but certainly represent an anti-establishment movement that could forever haunt the conservatives with 3-9% on any given federal election they're on in, and perhaps maybe even has provincial arms in certain jurisdictions that make life uncomfortable for conservatives across the country.
Tom, your take on that and other movements, you know, look, collapse of the Green Party. I mean, that's interesting because, you know, at the end of the night, maybe not the end of the night, but I think, you know, if Annamie Paul doesn't win, she's got to be out. She can't survive as a leader. If it's a weak conservative performance and they don't take out Justin Trudeau, he even has a strong minority, I think O'Toole's in trouble. If Trudeau loses, he's in trouble. Consequential stuff. What's your take on the wild cards? Or is it a one-off or is it permanent?
Well, Maxime Bernier has obviously been building, if we just look at the last election and this one. But at the same time, going back to our discussion before about the big gamble of O'Toole, which is to recenter the party, is it going to be only negative for him to have had Maxime Bernier there? Or was it possible for him then to look at Canadian voters and say, you see, that's the right-wing party that you're afraid of, not me. So maybe it'll have an effect of taking away some of his vote, but maybe it'll be a leveling effect with regard to mainstream, you know, Canadian politics. At the same time, I couldn't agree more. I mean, with all of the ups and downs that she's been through, and she did so well, by the way, in the debates, it's going to be very tough to imagine how long Annamie Paul being able to stay on for any real length of time after this election. And I think that what we're doing now is talking about an election that basically nobody wanted, and a result that nobody can predict. And this is what's so unique about this situation. I've been at this for a whole long time, and I've never seen anything like it, because there is so much on the table, just the conversation that we've just had. So vox populi, vox Dei. You know, people are going to have the final word today.
By the way, some people are texting me like, hey, there's a picture of Justin Trudeau in blackface. Again, it's circulating around. It appears to be the same event as we'd seen before, but it seems to be a new picture. Now I don't know, but it's circulating around, and hey, welcome to the last days of the campaign. This emerges now.
The last hour.
The Hunter Biden laptop equivalent of the campaign, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know. Zane, you're out in Alberta. I know the situation with Jason Kenney out there and the horrible situation with COVID. I don't want to make Jason Kenney the victim of it. The victim are the people in the hospitals here. Does this have a consequential impact on the campaign for either O'Toole or Trudeau?
Yes, to both. I mean, initially when the news came out of Alberta on Wednesday evening when Kenny made this announcement, most of us watchers here knew about the palpable anger in Alberta, but thought that the timing of this story would only last a day or two. But O'Toole's refusal to answer the question a dozen times on Thursday, or on Friday, I should say, and then go dark over the weekend with the media, which was a strategy I would not advise, has made it worse for him. And it's allowed Trudeau to shadow box against Kenny in a way that he hasn't had a chance to in a free lane before. So I think Trudeau's played it nicely in the sense that he hasn't gone so aggressive trying to dunk on a 6-foot net against Jason Kenny. He's been, you know, keeping it above the fray. But man, oh man, has O'Toole made a bad situation worse by not having an answer and then subsequently going dark and then canceling on your colleagues at CTV, Evan, with that one-on-one sit down as well.
Tash, who's giving him advice? Like, O'Toole had an opening. Like, Jason Kenney apologizes. Yeah. He's admitted an error.
Yeah.
O'Toole could have piled on.
Here's the answer. Jason Kenney was right in the first wave. He is wrong now. Let's move on. Sorry, Tasha.
Well, he could have definitely finessed it. He should have given an answer, whatever the answer was, but he could have finessed it. And just, you know, you're not going to lose.
We're out of time. Zane took your time.
Now,
Tasha, Tom, and Zane.
Sorry.
We'll be back tomorrow. Blame. Guys, good luck tonight. I got to take a break. You're the best.